Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
What's happening, DMV? How's everybody doing today? 106.7 The Fan is on your AM-FM dial. It's on the radio.com app. It's on our stream at thefandc.com. And however you're tuned in today, we appreciate you hanging out with us for a little bit. My name is Danny Noakes. Our guy Darius here producing the show. Wow, what a game. What a comeback. What a win. Into the All-Star break go the Capitals. They begin their week off following an unbelievable game against the New York Islanders. Washington down 4-1 heading into the third period, and they come all the way back to beat New York 6-4. Had the chance to listen to this one while I was driving up from Richmond today and had a couple of quick observations. One, we're incredibly fortunate to have the talented radio teams here on the station, 106.7 The Fan. John Walton, the voice of the Caps, his partner Ken Saverin, do a fantastic job. And of course, we got Charlie Sloz and Dave Jagler, who are on the call each and every night the Washington Nationals trot out onto the field. It's fantastic to listen to. Second observation, I was a little bit over an hour out earlier today, and I was passing through Spotsylvania, able to get 106.7 The Fan on the radio, which is very convenient. Usually listen on the radio.com app, which is also convenient, but the signal's strong all the way out there. And the third observation that I had is the NHL has some dumb rules. I mean, the Caps challenged one of the Islanders' first goals in this game, and they got it wrong, which is the first time that's happened this season. So what happens when you get a challenge wrong in the NHL? Well, you get a penalty. Could you imagine every time a coach challenged a play and got it wrong in the NFL, they got slapped with 15 yards every single time? It'd be ridiculous. So the other dumb rule in the NHL is what players that are voted to the All-Star game get suspended for a game when they opt not to participate in the All-Star activities. And Alex Ovechkin, not playing for a second straight All-Star game, he'll get suspended. It's most ridiculous for a guy like Ovi, who not only is unbelievably dominant in the regular season, but he's got those postseason accolades to back it up these days. The dude just doesn't want to play in a game that doesn't matter, and you're going to penalize him. It's just weak. But anyway, we had the results of today's game, an incredible comeback by the Capitals. Down 4-1, they unleash an absolute firestorm in the third period, 5 goals that leads Washington to a 6-4 win over the New York Islanders. And Devon Taves does Kuznetsov's bird celebration after he scores just before the end of the second period. And that may not have been smart. And the way that this one ended, you might have seen a little bit of karma right there. But going into the box score, that third period for the Capitals that was just massive looked like this. Carl Hagelin scoring 2 minutes, 33 seconds into the period. Ovechkin got on the board for his second goal in a game a little over 5 minutes in. Then it was Tom Wilson who joined the party. Then Jacob Vrana unassisted 17 and a half minutes into the period before Alex Ovechkin put one home in the empty net with just under a minute to go in the game. It gave Alex Ovechkin another hat trick, and it also gave Ovechkin 692 career goals that ties Steve Yzerman for ninth all-time, 692 goals. And you also saw Ilya Samsonov come into the game. He played the third period after Braden Holtby was pulled after the first two periods, which were a debacle. Samsonov, though, moves to 15-2-1 on the season. He helps lead the Capitals back. But Ben Raby, also of the Washington Capitals radio crew, tweeted this out. This is regarding Alex Ovechkin's first goal of the game, which came all the way back in the first period. The Caps actually got on the board first. They were up 1-0, and then New York scored 4 straight. It was 4-1 going to the third. This, though, from Ben Raby on Twitter, quote, "For the first time in his NHL career, Alex Ovechkin has three consecutive multi-goal games. Ovi now has 7 goals in his last 3 games. Narrator, it would go to 9 goals in his last 3 games. 33 on the year. Narrator, 35 now. And 691, narrator, 692 in his NHL career to pass Mario Lemieux for 10th most in league history. Golly, end quote. Yeah, golly indeed, because Ovechkin might be playing his absolute best hockey right now. And I had to chime in there because, again, that was Ben tweeting after Ovi's first goal. He would score 2 more goals in the game, and it absolutely was incredible to listen to and to watch. And it gives the Caps some big-time momentum as they head into the All-Star break. Ben and both John Walton noted that it was incredibly fitting that Ovechkin's partner in crime, Nick Backstrom, got the primary assist on that first goal. And that's what led me to ask this question that we're going to rehash throughout the show. Who is going to go down as the best duo in the modern history of DC sports? Now, I have to limit this to the last 30 years. I'm going to, for the sake of this conversation, we don't necessarily have to, but I think we have at least 3 prominent duos across 3 different sports in this town right now that you could have a conversation about. 2 of them, obviously, have championships. 2 of the sets of duos have championships and therefore are going to have a severe advantage in this conversation. But who's going to go down as the best duo in the modern history of DC sports, that being the last 30 years? Will it be Ovechkin and Backstrom? Will it be Scherzer and Strasburg of the Nationals? Or when they're healthy, will it be John Wall and Bradley Beal? Right, we're still a ways away from seeing a healthy John Wall come back and play with Bradley Beal. And obviously, they're not as accomplished, certainly not in the postseason, as both the Caps and the Nationals now are, each having championships. But we're throwing them in there. We're throwing them a bone. We get 4 slots to put in a question on Twitter. We're going to put this up on Twitter. And so that's the question that we're asking. 800-636-1067 is the phone number. Who's going to go down as the best duo in the modern history of DC sports? We'll visit that question in about 15 or so minutes, because coming up next, RJ Anderson, CBSSports.com's Major League Baseball coverage, is going to join us. And we're going to talk about everything that's happened this week with the Houston Astros, Major League Baseball handing down some serious sanctions, the Stros firing their manager, the Red Sox did the same, the Mets did the same. We're going to get into it. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to The Fan. Thanks for hanging with us today on 106.7 The Fan, January 18th, 2020. Yes, we've moved on to 2020. Danny Noakes with you. Darris producing the show. Let's head on over to the phones where our first guest awaits us this evening. And we'll say hello to RJ Anderson, CBSSports.com's Major League Baseball coverage. A lot going on in Major League Baseball these days, RJ. What a week it was, my man. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing good, man. And Major League Baseball obviously handed down that penalty to the Houston Astros earlier this week. We saw a multi-million dollar fine. AJ Hinch, Luhnow, they each get suspended for the year. They lose their first and second round draft picks. And that was before all the firings came. And that was about as steep a penalty that the league could hand down. But then we saw Hinch and Luhnow get fired. Cora leaves Boston. Beltran leaves New York before ever managing a game. This has been a firestorm of epic proportions, but certainly one that would be the last thing that Major League Baseball needs, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, realistically, Major League Baseball has a lot of ethical and moral concerns these days. And, you know, starting into that murky waters where you can't really trust the integrity of the results. And I say that because you now have 2 of the last 3 World Series champions tied up in sign-stealing scandals. Last postseason, we saw an entirely different baseball than what had been used during the regular season. And then, you know, this is at a time when Major League Baseball is cozying up with legalized gambling. And again, like I mentioned earlier, you're starting to get into that really undesirable territory where you start to wonder, you know, is what we're seeing, you know, is there something going on here? You know, can we trust the results? Can we trust the score? Can we trust any of this? And that's not really an area Major League Baseball or any professional sport wants to enter.
You're exactly right. And Major League Baseball, at least when you compare it up against some of the other professional sports organizations here in the United States of America, obviously baseball has some identity issues with their players not being at the forefront of their promotions. From time to time, you have the length of the games. Everybody wants to make a complaint about some of the rules, but you also just brought up a great point in that people are now going to wonder, when the results of these games come out, is everything fair? And that's why my next question is, what are some of the possible long-term ramifications going to be going forward? Baseball already went through the steroid era relatively recently. That gave it a black eye, and this just gives it another.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I think that this is going to continue to snowball a little bit. I don't think that anyone is naive enough to believe that this was isolated to two or three teams. Mm-hmm. I think you're going to continue to see accusations and allegations made against other teams. And I mean, you know, it's kind of funny. People talk about vacating the Astros World Series title or the Red Sox World Series title, and I get that conversation, but the team they'd be vacating that title to, the Los Angeles Dodgers, is currently under investigation by the Department of Justice because of their dealings in the international free agent market. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like I said in the first, in response to the first question, baseball has a lot of ethical and moral considerations that they need to get right. And, you know, unfortunately, I do think it might get worse before it gets better.
RJ Anderson, CBSSports.com's Major League Baseball coverage with us on 106.7 The Fan. You can find him on Twitter at @R_J_Anderson. You just alluded to it, RJ, but my next question is, do you think that we've seen the last of the suspensions? I can't imagine that we have. Like you said, this is much more widespread than I think even a lot of people realize, but how much proof does Major League Baseball have where they'll be able to hand down some suspensions? What do you think?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, I do think we're going to see a very lengthy suspension handed out to Alex Cora, who has already lost his job as Boston Red Sox manager. And then after that, my guess is that baseball is probably going to try to duck out of it. You know, I don't think we're going to see them suspend players, in part because my guess is, as part of the investigation process of the Astros, they probably protected them with immunity if they were willing to talk and, you know, not lie to them. Mm. On top of that, remember, Major League Baseball would have to fight with the union if they started suspending players, and they really don't need higher tensions there. You already have a lot of angst on both sides because of the upcoming labor talks. And on top of that, you know, it's really a slippery slope. If you start suspending, you know, say 5 or 6 Houston Astros players, then everyone's going to get ratted out. And what do you do? You know, we're 2 months away from opening day. It's kind of too late in the offseason to really start punishing these teams. And I know, you know, people might say, well, don't cheat. And I agree. But I think that it just results in a very slippery slope if Major League Baseball were to start suspending players. So I think we're going to see Cora at least a season, perhaps longer. And then after that, I think we're probably done with official punishments unless there's something really damning that comes out.
What's also interesting, RJ, and this is my last thing here for you, is where these teams will now go from here. I mean, obviously, the Houston Astros, the Boston Red Sox, winners of the World Series in 2017 and 2018, respectively, they had some pretty good ball clubs coming back, and we're certainly going to contend for another World Series, you would think, here in 2020. The Mets can't exactly say the same thing, but they were certainly excited about having Carlos Beltran now in the building, and now they each have to find a manager with so little time between now and when spring training starts. So how much will this affect each of those team seasons going forward? Not that anybody should feel bad for them.
Yeah, it's a good question. And, you know, realistically, all three of those teams could compete for a playoff spot.
Sure.
That said, I think the Astros are the likeliest to make the postseason. You know, it still has a good roster. And Joe Espada, if he remains the manager there, you know, he's a legit managerial candidate. So there's nothing wrong with that. And, you know, you talk about the Red Sox. They've still been talking about trading Mookie Betts and David Price and all these other players. So they'll probably take a step back. And then the Mets, I mean, it's the Mets, you know. Unfortunately, as good as their roster looks on paper most years, they always seem to find a way to botch it. And this is like the most Mets outcome possible, right? Hire the franchise legend, you know, hire a guy that everyone likes, and then have him caught up in arguably the worst cheating scandal since the Black Sox. That's just so typically Mets.
It really is. And the other thing I would add to that, and because the Mets are everybody's favorite punching bag, it seems, they did get smacked with some pretty serious injuries last year, and they always seem to kind of have that bad luck. But like you said, it is very New York Mets for it to have unfolded this way. RJ, I will let you go, pal. Fascinating discussion, and I would imagine there's a lot still to come out of this investigation from Major League Baseball. Appreciate you carving out some time for us on a Saturday. We'll catch up soon, man.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
No problem. That's RJ Anderson, CBSSports.com's Major League Baseball coverage. One more time, if you'd like, you can find him on Twitter at @R_J_Anderson. I definitely understand that it is a complicated situation that you get into when you start talking about suspending the players. But at the same time, the players are the ones that carried this out, right? you have from the higher-ups, I suppose, the manager, right? I don't even think it was as much Jeff Luhnow, if we're talking about Houston, as it was A.J. Hinch. At least that would be my guess. But if those guys are the ringleaders, certainly guys like Jose Altuve and the rest of that team, they didn't have a gun to their head. They didn't have to carry this out necessarily. And none of the players are likely to see any suspensions, at least not any current players, right? So it's interesting. And what will Houston, Boston, and New York all do to get managers with just a couple of weeks out before spring training starts? I just saw across the bottom line here on ESPN that I'm watching here in the studio, Dusty Baker is interviewing with the Houston Astros. And I think I saw last night that he's also going to interview with the New York Mets. How many other names out there like a Dusty Baker are going to pop up now over the next couple of weeks as these teams scramble and try to figure out who's going to manage their teams going into 2020. It makes it very difficult on them, but again, you reap what you sow. You got to sleep in the bed that you've made for yourself, and that's exactly what these organizations now have to deal with. I got more thoughts on this. I see in the other room that Darius has that video of Alex Bregman speaking to the media pulled up on his computer right now, and there is absolutely no remorse from Alex Bregman in that interview. You would think that a team that was caught red-handed stealing on the internet, by the way, this all started with internet police. It didn't even have to do with Major League Baseball. You got caught red-handed, and you're not even sorry for it. I think it's just pathetic. I got more on that. We got plenty more to get into. Our first half hour is up. We'll be right back. You're listening to 106.7 Fan. So the Bleacher Report picked this up from Astros second baseman Jose Altuve today. This is a quote from Altuve. "Believe me, at the end of the year, everything will be fine. We will be in the World Series again," end quote. And then our own Danny Ruye, middays, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., alongside Grant Paulson right here on 106.7 The Fan, off the top rope, quotes the tweet saying, "Bold prediction from Altuve. It's like he knows what's coming." Slapped knee. That's fantastic right there. Amazing content and perfectly timed coming out of an interview with our good friend RJ Anderson, CBSSports.com's Major League Baseball coverage. We appreciate his time just a couple of minutes ago. How's everybody doing today? Danny Noakes with you on 106.7 The Fan. Darius is over in the other room producing the show. It's been a fun start. We're a half hour in and we're with you up until the 7 o'clock hour. And it's been an eventful day once again here on 106.7 The Fan, all starting with the Washington Capitals. Incredible, improbable comeback win over the New York Islanders. Final score, 6-4, heading into the third period. The Caps were down 4-1, but they come roaring back. They steal a win, and they head into the All-Star break with some significant momentum. 3-game win streak, and now they get to rest. They get 7 days off. Ovechkin's not going to play in the All-Star game. He's going to get suspended for that, but in the long run, I would say that's probably going to end up being more of a benefit, even if it's one of the NHL's dumber rules. Now, before we get into anything else, some area scores from today. There have been a lot of them, and this is a pretty wide-ranging area, right? This is the DMV, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. So we saw the Caps got the win 6-4 of the Islanders. A little matinee hockey action for you. The Terps, the number 17 Maryland Terrapins, got a win today 57-50 over the Purdue Boilermakers. The Georgetown Hoyas fell in a conference clash with the Marquette Golden Eagles, 84-80. I was disappointed to see that result. I had the Hoyas as my, hopefully, win two on Streak for the Cash on ESPN. Beat the Streak is a different bit that I participate in. But obviously, that's going to come up as a loss. Georgetown going down 84-80. Virginia Tech lost 71-69 at home to the Syracuse Orange, a team that Virginia Tech had beat a little over a week ago. VCU, 91-63 winners over St. Bonaventure. Radford is playing Presbyterian. And Radford at Presbyterian, by the way, 13-11 the score, just under 12 to go there in the first half. And then UVA in action later tonight at Georgia Tech. And the Washington Wizards, not in action until Monday, as a matter of fact. They'll get the Pistons with a 2 o'clock tip-off. I think I covered about everything there. All the big games in Virginia, Maryland, D.C., we got it. So that gives us the time to go back to the question that I wanted to ask. And this is where you guys come in, 800-636-1067. Who will go down as the best duo in the modern era of DC sports? Is it Alex Ovechkin and Nick Backstrom? Backstrom assisting on Ovechkin's first goal of a hat trick for Ovi in Washington's 6-4 win over the Islanders today. Is it Scherzer and Strasburg, the 1-2 pitching duo for the Nationals? Is it a healthy John Wall and Bradley Beal, or is it other? We're going to get this up on Twitter here in a sec, but let's go on over to the phones. 800-636-1067. Paul is in Waldorf. He's got a take on this. Paul, thanks for calling. What's up, man?
Hey, how you doing, man?
Good.
Hey, look, I'm really cool with, you know, Ovi and Backstrom, yep, and Strasburg and Scherzer. And you threw modern in there.
Yes. I had to make a cutoff. I had to make a cutoff somewhere.
Well, I don't think you can cut off Elvin Hayes and Wes Unseld. And to me, I'm a little older guy. I'm 66.
Okay.
But Elvin Hayes and Wes Unseld, you know, they won the D.C.'s first championship since the 1924 Senators. And they went to back-to-back finals.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just think they need to be included. John Wall and Bradley Beal have won jack. And so all I'm saying is that you need to give a little love. You need to maybe stretch the modern, you know.
I got
go back
you.
To the, yeah, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, and
I'm just going to listen and see what you have to say about that. Thank you for taking my call.
Of course, Paul. Thank you for calling. And thank you for bringing that up, by the way. Paul brings up Elvin Hayes and Wes Unseld, who led the Washington Bullets to D.C.'s first championship since the Senators were able to win. And really, they won the first modern championship, right? The first NBA Finals. That was before the Redskins had ever won a Super Bowl, certainly long before the Caps or the Nationals ever got their championships. And they absolutely would make this list if it were a list that stretched beyond the last 30 years. And I guess I need to explain myself as to why I cut this off at 30 years. And it has to do with the fact that with the Redskins, who have the most championships among the DC sports teams, and it's been a really long time, obviously, since they've won one of those championships, but I kind of had a tough time coming up with who would have been the best duo from the Redskins team, right? Because you could use the Hogs, right? You could use their offensive line unit that was so dominant through those Super Bowl runs, and maybe pick a couple of Hall of Famers from there, a couple of Hall of Fame players. I don't know if you would necessarily call them a duo. Elvin Hayes, though, and Wes Unseld is fantastic, and they absolutely 100% deserve credit for this. We just had to cut it off somewhere, right? So that's why I'm going with the last 30 years. And I did preface this a couple of segments ago saying, yes, a healthy John Wall and Bradley Beal, even if John is healthy, obviously they're the least accomplished of anybody on this list and are a pretty distant third between Ovi and Backstrom, Scherzer and Strasburg, whoever you have in first. 800-636-1067. Jim is in D.C. He's got a take. Jim, what's up, buddy? How are you?
Yeah, so we're going to go back to the Bullets back in the late 70s, and you're opening up to that conversation.
Yes,
I think there's two groups you got to think about, and that's Ewing and John Thompson, and I'd say Beathard and Joe Gibbs. I mean, you're talking about combos, and what they did for DC sports is pretty amazing.
Yes. Okay, so there's and Jim, I'm glad you brought that up because I was having a problem figuring out who the duo from the Redskins would be. So you like Gibbs and Beathard.
Well, think about what they built the time that they were in place.
Yeah.
I mean, the players that Beathard brought in terms of the scab players to beat the Cowboys.
Mm-hmm.
Think about the players he picked up from the USFL when it broke apart. I mean, he just constantly was able to. I mean, think about bringing in Wilbur Marshall, which was one of the big free agent signees.
Yeah.
I mean, he constantly reloaded the three quarterbacks they brought in to win championships. I mean, look, Theismann was here when he took over, but you talk about Schrader and Williams, and you talk about Rippon. I mean, that was an organization in terms of just combo. And you could throw Jack Kent Cook in there and say it was a trio.
There you go.
The three of them.
I like that, but, Jim. Yeah, Jim, thanks for the call, man. I appreciate it. And you bring up a really good point there. Joe Gibbs and Bobby Beathard. See, I was thinking just in terms of players, and I should not have been. Joe Gibbs definitely was one of the names that came to mind, but I was wondering who you would pair him with, right? So I'm really glad, Jim, with a great call. Patrick Ewing and John Thompson also is another duo that would deserve consideration if we're really stretching this thing out beyond 30 years. 800-636-1067. Some good calls so far. We're going to take a couple more. Carson is in Fairfax. I believe this is C Money. What's up, buddy?
Hey, how are you doing today, Danny?
I'm doing good, brother. What's up?
Just calling to say we would like to say a Strasburg and Scherzer, they're going to be at least top three.
Okay. Well, I've got them in the top three, but is Strasburg and Scherzer that 1-2 punch better than Ovechkin and Backstrom?
For us, yes, just because they won the World Series more recently.
Okay.
Or one championship series.
All right. All right. Yeah. Well, I appreciate the call, Carson. Hit us up again soon, my man. 800-636-1067. Yeah, Strasburg and Scherzer, I think, are going to have a little bit of the recency bias here because, yes, they won the World Series a little bit more recently than the Caps won their Stanley Cup. There was only a year between them, though, so it's not like it was a huge gap. My lean here is to go with Ovechkin and Backstrom. And it really has to do only with the fact that I have a better feeling about the Caps winning another Stanley Cup in the next couple of years than I do about the Nats. It doesn't mean that the Nats aren't 100% capable of even repeating and doing it here in 2020. But I just got to go with Ovi and Backy. You know, their success has been sustained too now for over 10 years. And both guys do different things so well. Backstrom is the perfect complement to Ovechkin, and Ovi is, as Barry Trotz, his former head coach, and now the head coach of the New York Islanders, said, Ovechkin is the greatest goal scorer of all time. I'm not here to make that claim, but that does come from Barry Trotz, his former coach, the guy that was the opponent's head coach of the team that he was playing against earlier today. So, great calls so far, 800-636-1067. We're taking your calls on who's going to go down as the best duo in the modern era, the last 30 years of DC sports. And if you've got some guys that you think deserve to be mentioned, like Paul gave us Elvin Hayes and Wes Unseld, and Jim giving us Patrick Ewing, John Thompson, as well as Joe Gibbs and Bobby Beathard. These are all good. We got to step aside, take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll take more of your calls right here on 106.7 The Fan. Danny Noakes with you on 106.7 The Fan. Darius producing the show. You can tweet me at Danny Noakes. Tweet the station at 106.7 The Fan. I've got this show question up as a poll on my Twitter account at Danny Noakes, so you can vote there as well. But we're going to go back on over to the phones as we have Don in Temple Hills, who I believe has a Redskins duo for us. Don, what's up, buddy? How you doing?
Hey, Dan. Great show, man.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. You're welcome. I have two Redskins from the Joe Gibbs era.
Okay.
That I think that every team had to game plan for. And I would like to nominate Mann and Manley. They were both in Super Bowls, and they were both Pro Bowlers.
I like that. That's a strong nomination right there. Don, did you have another for us?
Did I have another what?
Didn't you say you had two duos? You had a couple of Redskins duos for us?
Yeah, a couple of Redskins, but just that's the only duo.
Oh, okay, okay. All right, I like it. Charles Mann, Dexter Manley.
Yes, sir.
All right, Don.
Thank you very much, and I'll hang up and listen to your comment.
All right, Don, I appreciate it. Thanks for calling in. That's Don in Temple Hills. Another strong, strong nomination right there. Charles Mann, Dexter Manley. So I mentioned this a couple of minutes ago, was having trouble, and this is part of the reason that we limited it down to the last 30 years, I couldn't figure out who I wanted the duo for the Redskins to be. And Jim, who called us last segment, gave me Joe Gibbs and Bobby Beathard. And I think that's fantastic. This should absolutely not just be limited to players, because what Joe Gibbs and Bobby Beathard were able to build here in DC in terms of sustaining a long-term winner, collecting three Super Bowls, that certainly cannot be overlooked. And now Don gives us Charles Mann and Dexter Manley, who, as he said, you had to game plan for those guys. And I know they played before, certainly I really could comprehend football and before I was born. But obviously their lore, where they rest in Redskins history, they can't be overlooked either. It's tough to say that they had a bigger impact, I suppose, on the Redskins than Joe Gibbs and Bobby Beathard did. But Charles Mann and Dexter Manley also had sustained success there in the NFL. So that's a very fair nomination, I think, for our question today, which is who will go down as the best duo in the modern era? That's the last 30 years of DC sports. Ovechkin and Backstrom, Scherzer and Strasburg, a healthy John Wall and Bradley Beal, or we're giving you a fourth option as other. You can write me in, again, at Danny Noakes on Twitter. You can tweet me if you have some more thoughts. We've got the poll going right now. And coming up here in a little over 10 minutes, we're going to talk to Dwight Vick, former All-Big East offensive lineman. He writes for 247 Sports. We'll do a little NFL with Dwight. I'm also going to get Dwight's thoughts on what happened this week with Virginia Tech and Justin Fuente flirting with the Baylor Bears and their vacant head coaching position, only to ultimately stay in Blacksburg. We won't spend a ton of time on that, but I know there are some Virginia Tech fans here in our listening audience. We have a large alumni base here in the Northern Virginia area. Won't spend too much time on it, though, because it's championship weekend, and we got the NFL playoffs coming up tomorrow. AFC Championship, that's the first game that's going to kick off, and it's a fantastic matchup. The Tennessee Titans are at the Kansas City Chiefs, a 305 kick. Current line, at least when I saw it earlier this morning, had the Chiefs laying 7 points. And then in the second game, the NFC Championship, you have what really looks like a classic matchup here. The Green Bay Packers head to the Bay Area. They will battle the San Francisco 49ers with a 6:40 kickoff. Both games have me incredibly excited. I have to say, I'm a little partial right now, and I've been saying this for about a week now that we have had the championship game set, but I would really like to see a rematch of Super Bowl I, Green Bay versus Kansas City. And the reason is, and I don't necessarily think that Green Bay is a better team than the San Francisco 49ers right now. I don't necessarily think that they'll win, but let me make the case at least for a rematch of Super Bowl I. You would have a matchup, obviously, of Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers. There's not a ton more that needs to be said beyond that. I think you would have an incredible back-and-forth game. I don't necessarily think that the Packers match up as well against the Chiefs as a team like San Francisco does, and that's why I think that we will see a 49ers-Chiefs Super Bowl. I still think that the Chiefs are the best team in the league right now, and I think you saw that last weekend where they fall behind, at, what was it, 24-0 to Houston? It was more than 3 touchdowns, and they came roaring back to win it comfortably. And it's so tough to pinpoint one guy on that offense. Obviously, Mahomes is the orchestrator playing the quarterback position, and he's so dynamic and able to get the ball to all of the talented playmakers that they have on their offense. But that's just it. They have so many of them, it's really difficult to key in on one guy. So I think that Kansas City right now is the favorite to go and win this thing, but San Francisco poses the greatest threat because of what they're able to do defensively. And Green Bay, I believe, has really made strides forward this year defensively, right? With the addition of guys like Preston Smith coming over from the Redskins, and he's finally healthy now. People wondering why the Redskins let him go. Oh, because he was never on the field in any, right? But Green Bay and San Francisco, I said that it has the makings or the look of one of those classic matchups. The Packers and the Niners are two very historical franchises. But we're going to watch it, I would assume. I haven't checked the weather. But it's probably going to be about ideal conditions out there in San Francisco, in the Bay Area, where the 49ers will host this matchup with the Packers. And I think that just is going to create ideal conditions for the offense to go out and put up points and hopefully, therefore, give us a good game. But if you go back to the AFC Championship, that might actually be where the best story that we have going in the NFL playoffs is right now. And that would be Derrick Henry, who, my goodness, last week he put on an absolute clinic. And I actually tend to think that he probably is the best story that we've got going to the NFL playoffs right now, and that's for a few reasons. I mean, he's dominating a league on the ground that's supposed to be a passing league, right? I mean, you watch him run the football, and nobody wants to tackle him, but even when you have to tackle him, you barely tackle him because he's chiseled. He's cut out of stone. I mean, the dude is an absolute freak. I mean, you put him in a different era and he probably would have been king of some long tribe back in the day. I don't even know. You would just never be able to physically overpower him. He's an incredibly large but talented human. He's been so dominant recently, and he's also, by all accounts, a pretty likable guy, right? I mean, off the field, he seems like a pretty likable dude. I think the Titans, their identity
this underdog mentality that they have where they rely so heavily on the ground game and they do it kind of old-fashioned. They've got Vrabel, who's a young coach, but really has an old-fashioned mentality having played for Bill Belichick and the Patriots. But it's the Titans who have never really won anything. So I think it's also an entertaining storyline that we have going. There are two of them on championship weekend, and that's why I think it's going to be so much fun tomorrow. Tennessee at Kansas City, 3:05 kick, and then Green Bay at San Francisco, 6:40 kick. We'll talk about each of those coming up next with our guy Dwight Vick, a former All-Big East offensive lineman, writer for 247 Sports, and we'll also get his thoughts on Justin Fuente returning to Virginia Tech after it looked like he might leave for the Baylor job. You're listening to 106.7 The Fan. Lots more to do today on 106.7 The Fan. We are with you up until the 7 o'clock hour. The Washington Capitals, they don't play tonight. That's because they had a little matinee earlier today, and the result, a 6-4 win for Washington over the New York Islanders. They storm back from being down 4-1. I got more thoughts on that. It's related to our show question today, which at some point we'll ask our next guest, but that's where we head now, over to the phones to welcome our next guest. And let's give a warm welcome to my good friend Dwight Vick, a former All-Big East offensive lineman. He's a writer for 247 Sports, and he's kind enough to join us now. Dwight, you getting by today with the cold and the rain? Hopefully not too much trouble for you. How's it going, man?
It's been going great, man. The weather's fine. It's supposed to be like this, right? This winter, you know, last few days before this, it was feeling like it was March. So it feels like it's back to normal.
I feel you, man. Now, we got a few different things that we got to get into today. Virginia Tech will do some of the AFC-NFC championship, but real quick, your thoughts on our show question, who's going to go down as the best duo in the modern era of DC sports? Ovechkin, Backstrom, Scherzer, Strauss, healthy John Wall, Bradley Beal, or would you like to nominate somebody else? What do you think, man?
Wow.
It's tough.
That's a tough question. I think I voted on Twitter. I went with Ovechkin, but then I thought about Scherzer and Strasburg. And I mean, you know, I don't know. I will stick with Ovechkin and Backstrom, but I will say this. I said if I could add somebody, since we're talking about DC sports the last 30 years, I don't know if my math is right, but I would try to sneak in Joe Gibbs and any Redskin quarterback.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. Joe Gibbs, and that's why I had a tough time kind of coming up with who would be from the Redskins, because Gibbs obviously won the Super Bowl with three different quarterbacks, but I appreciate it, man. I put you on the spot right there. I agree with you, by the way. Ovechkin and Backstrom is my pick. I'll give you more thoughts on that later, but I want to get your thoughts, Dwight, on Justin Fuente and his flirtation with Baylor and their vacant head coaching position. And obviously Fuente ultimately did not get the job for whatever reason. We don't know exactly why he didn't get the job, but nonetheless, he's going back to Blacksburg. He's going to coach Virginia Tech this fall. He tweets out this picture of him and his coaching staff after all that speculation, didn't address the media. He makes athletic director Whit Babcock do that. And it leaves a sour taste in the mouths of the fans, Dwight, especially when you consider that this athletic department isn't exactly transparent, is it?
You know, no. And you know, I saw the picture. I thought it was a great picture, but I also felt like it was a situation in which, you know, if you heard me speak on previous shows or you follow me on Twitter, I really feel like transparency is lacking right now, given the fact that, you know, the Virginia Tech fan base, and if you talk to a lot of, you know, college football and basketball fans, many people will say, hey, we got the best fans in the nation, and we do this. I'm sure the Terps, given their basketball tradition and pedigree, they have a great fan base. Penn State is big in this area. Virginia Tech, Hokie Nation has a strong alumni. You've seen what they've done when they have had games at FedEx. This fan base that follows Virginia Tech, the Hokie Nation, has been very outspoken and dedicated. They're known for their travel and how they come to bowl games. And I feel like they have been patient. And I know national championships don't grow on trees, and you shouldn't expect that, especially since we are still in transition mode, given Beamer left just 4 years ago. However, I feel like when you go on an interview like that, speculation and assumptions can sometimes, many cases, lead to irrational comments, you know, assumptions, and people trying to figure out on their own. I felt like when he got back, I felt like some kind of statement should have been made. And keep in mind, Danny, I was on Virginia Tech teams when Beamer was the head coach.
Right.
And prior to that whole thing about him potentially taking that UNC job during the Andre Davis, Michael Vick years, he actually almost took another job when I was there in the late 90s. He held a press conference to tell the players, media, and coaches why he decided to stay in Virginia Tech. And he also talked glowingly about his plans for the future. I think that's what fans that follow Tech right now need, is reassurance. I think recruits need that. Obviously, you know, you mentioned flirting. It's part of the job. I mean, but at the same time, if you're married like me, you can't flirt. Well, you know, you shouldn't anyway.
Right. Very well,
you know,
said.
So it's one of those things where, you know, if you're married and you're committed to the program and you're all in, the picture's cool. But I think, you know, given the outspoken fan base, you don't want everyone to assume you want us to come back and hear that, you know, you're committed, the Baylor job was offered to you, whatever. We don't know if it was offered or mm-hmm. if he took it or if he turned it down.
Right.
And I just think, you know, winning solves everything, but speculation sometimes can take on a mind of its own. And I feel like, you know, maybe a statement or something, hopefully in the foreseeable future, will take place.
Yeah, and that's exactly why it really, I feel like, left a sour taste in the mouths of the fans because, yeah, after all of that speculation, and it really did seem like that Fuente was on his way out the door, you would have expected to at least do some sort of message, whether it was on Twitter or whether he got up in front of the media, you would have expected him to at least come and say something about why he's coming back to Virginia Tech when it really felt like he was going to leave. Now, going into 2020, Dwight, 19 to 22 starters were expected to return for the Hokies. Damon Hazelton just entered the transfer portal, so that number is going to be affected. But still, this team returns almost its entire, both sides of the ball, offense and defense, Hendon Hooker at quarterback. Expectations are going to be high, and they generally are in Blacksburg. But if this team doesn't come away with the Coastal Championship and a shot at Clemson in the ACC Championship game, we might be talking about Fuente's seat getting a little hot.
Well, it should be. I mean, listen, expectations come with the job. It comes with the territory. And for this team, returning the starters they have and the depth they have, it warrants it. And I feel like you look at Virginia Tech's schedule, you have a big matchup against Penn State at home after you open up against Liberty at home. You look at the Coastal Division, it's been mocked and joked many times via your show, ESPN, or whatever. And that's fine. But Miami is going through allegations. They're transitioning. They're rebuilding. UVA is losing pretty much a lot of people, especially in that dynamic quarterback Perkins. And you look at Pittsburgh, they're a quality team. Carolina will be a team to be reckoned with. But, again, Virginia Tech should still have a leg up on them since entering the ACC. They've only lost to Carolina at least twice. So Virginia Tech should be the favorite. But at the same time, will your team buy in? You know, you got a guy like Hazelton who has been your leading receiver for the last two seasons. And after you tweak the picture, you're coming back, he enters his name in the portal. Now, Virginia Tech does have that dynamic receiver that's transferring from Rutgers, and they have also Trey Turner, and they also have a few other guys that are really dynamic. But when it comes down to it, Virginia Tech has to win this year, and they have to play ball, and they have to I feel like it's Coastal or bust. And I don't think it's so much that if he doesn't win the Coastal, he's fired. But I feel like given what you have, this is no longer being with players. You won when you first came in there, a Coastal Division title, and then played Clemson to an extremely close game where you had them on the ropes, and you won 10 games in that miraculous comeback against Arkansas in the Belk Bowl. But since then, you're 1-3 in bowl games. You had embarrassing losses, one of the worst losses in Virginia Tech history on Friday night against Duke this past season, 45-10. Duke didn't even go to a bowl this season. You lost opening to Boston College, which left your fans puzzled because later on in the season, we realized Ryan Willis wasn't the guy, but yet you and your offensive coordinator were not transparent on why you went with Willis and why Hooker fit your offense given the RPOs and spreads you run. So this year, these are all your guys. I think there are no more Beamer guys. So this is your team, your program. The expectations to win a division that's not that tough should be expected, and I think fans should embrace that, and the program should expect to win it.
Couldn't have said it better. Dwight Vick, former All-Big East offensive lineman and writer for 247 Sports with us on 106.7 The Fan. And Dwight, I could definitely talk Hokies with you all day, pal, but I do want to get your thoughts on Championship Sunday that we've got coming up tomorrow in the National Football League. I've already kind of discussed how excited I am for this couple of games. I mean, the AFC and NFC, if we start with the AFC matchup between Tennessee and Kansas City, you might have the best story of the playoffs so far in Derrick Henry. going up against maybe the best team in the Kansas City Chiefs, led by Patrick Mahomes. What are your thoughts on the way this one might shake out?
I never thought in a million years you and I would be talking about Ryan Tannehill and Tennessee Titans
right.
having a chance to go to the Super Bowl. And again, you know, being a Redskin country, that's disheartening yeah. if you're a Redskin fan, because Tennessee has come full circle and looks to have moved on, you know, from their quarterback. So having Tannehill and Derrick Henry, they're hot right now. Look, New England's down. They're not the same team that they've been in previous years. But yet, the Tennessee Titans went there and beat them convincingly. It wasn't so much they blew them out, but they controlled tempo, they dominated the game. And then they went to Baltimore, which, you know, say what you want, has been playing the best football pretty much of anybody along with San Francisco all mm-hmm. season. And they dominated them from start to finish and held the soon-to-be-named MVP, Lamar Jackson, in check. And now they have a high-powered offense. And listen, I've seen many tweets and I've heard many shows. The pressure is all on Andy Reid. If there ever was a game in which the team was playing with house money, it's the Tennessee Titans, given what they had with Derrick Henry and Tannehill, and they're confident. I would probably go with Kansas City. I expect the Titans to be in the game because they will control the clock and see what people may not realize is in a game of this kind of magnitude. The Chiefs may hold Derrick Henry in check in the first and second quarters, but that huge Optimus Prime running back is going to be a load in the third and fourth quarter. And that's when Tennessee puts their stamp on the game, because who would ever thought teams like them and San Fran would be in this position, given we're in the day and age of passing offenses. So it's going to be a good game. I would expect, obviously, ball control offense from Tennessee. But if Kansas City gets rolling like you saw against the Texans, it's going to be a long day for the Titans.
Optimus Prime running the ball. That's such a perfect description of Derrick Henry when he gets the football there for the Tennessee Titans. Dwight, my last question.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, dude. The NFC Championship, I think, is also a fantastic matchup. It's a classic matchup. It's the Packers at the Niners. It's going to be out in the Bay Area. I tend to think, Dwight, that San Francisco here is the more complete team. Their defense is going to carry them to a win and a matchup with the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. But what say you?
You know, I'm done picking against the 49ers. They have proved me wrong all season. I know, along with other analysts that cover the game even in more depth, have also said the same thing, that, you know, people are trying to figure out. They've won a lot of close games, and yet they look to be the part. Garoppolo is found a home in San Fran, and he just looks comfortable. And if San Fran gets the lead, it's curtains, because they run the football so well. Like I mentioned about the Titans, again, in the day and age of passing game, you pretty much would not expect a team like San Fran to be successful. So as much as I like Aaron Rodgers as a quarterback, and I think Aaron Jones has been great for them, the reality is statistically Aaron Rodgers' numbers have all been down. Now, some of that's been because they've gone with more of a running game, but I think San Fran's going to be tough to beat. I do think you can erase what happened early in the year when they beat the Packers 37-8. That was a regular season. The Packers have played much better, but I think right now, if I had to pick, I would go with San Fran versus Kansas City in the Super Bowl.
Yep, we're definitely on the same page there. I've also got San Francisco and Kansas City playing for it all in just a couple of weekends. Dwight, thanks for carving out some time for us this weekend, my man. Get to enjoying the rest of your Saturday night. Be safe out there on the roads, and we appreciate it, buddy. We'll catch up again soon.
Thank you, man. You have a good one.
You too, bud. That's Dwight Vick, former All-Big East offensive lineman and a writer for 247 Sports. You can find him on Twitter, at Vick757. Some great stuff there from Dwight. And I definitely put him on the spot there asking him about our show question, which at 800-636-1067, you can certainly answer. The show question that we're asking is, who will go down as the best duo in the modern era? That would be the last 30 years of DC sports. Is it Ovechkin and Backstrom? Is it Max Scherzer and Steven Strasburg? Is it, or could it rather be, a healthy John Wall and Bradley Beal when John comes back and you think that the Wizards might go on a run? I'd say you are certainly in the minority on the folks that actually think that John Wall will be the same type of player when he comes back from this injury. Or you can vote other. It's on Twitter, at Danny Noakes. I've got the show question up, at Danny Noakes, if you want to vote there. Or 800-636-1067, you can also call us. I've got some thoughts on some NFL draft topics to close out the hour when we return. This is 106.7 The Fan. We're with you up until 7 o'clock, and I've got plenty more to get into. We're wide open the rest of the show. Our final hour from 6 to 7, we're going to be talking plenty of Capitals hockey. Washington victorious 6-4 over the Islanders today. They came back from being down 4-1 to get the win. They head into the All-Star break on a 3-game win streak. They've been on quite a run, and they're still not playing their best hockey. Nowhere near, as a matter of fact. So it's also led to our show question today, which is, who will go down as the best duo in the modern era, the last 30 years of DC sports? And your four choices are Ovechkin and Backstrom of the Caps, Scherzer and Strasburg of the Nats, a healthy John Wall and Bradley Beal from the Wiz, or you can write us in one at other. It's on Twitter, at Danny Noakes, or you can call 800-636-1067 if you'd like to chime in that way. Over to the phones where Chris in Damascus is waiting. He's got a take on our show question. What's up, Chris? How are you?
Hey, I'm fine, thank you. And I was wondering if it was longevity. Yeah, I still go Scherzer, Strasburg, mm-hmm. because of the fewer teams that get into baseball,
sure.
as opposed to the hockey. But I love the hockey too, and so I say they're second. But my stars, and you, I don't understand why you cut it off after 30 years. But if you go back 30 years, the best duo for one season was Joe Jacoby and Jim Lachey, who didn't let Mark Redmond get sacked but 7 times in one season. For heaven's sakes, quarterbacks get sacked 7 times a game nowadays.
Yeah, that's a good point. And Jacoby somehow is still not in the Hall of Fame, by the way, which is just an absolute crime.
I know all of that nonsense. But, yeah, I give the nod to Strauss and Scherzer because of the little more difficult to get into the playoffs, much less win them, even though hockey is just as difficult, but fewer teams make it, and that's my point.
Chris, great call. Thank you so much for ringing us up here, 800-636-1067. So Chris also throws in Joe Jacoby and Jim Lachey into a couple of Redskins that could be on the list, but his vote is for Scherzer and Strasburg, which it's a very good vote, and here's my thoughts on it. I think right now, if you stack the four careers up, Ovechkin and Backstrom for the Caps and Scherzer Strasburg for the Nats, I think right now the Nationals and what Scherzer and Strasburg has done is a little bit more impressive. They each have championships, but Scherzer's got the two Cy Youngs. As Chris just mentioned, fewer teams get into the Major League Baseball playoffs, and this run that the Nationals went on to win the World Series was so much more improbable than the one that the Caps went on. The Caps have President's Cup trophies out the wazoo. They've been one of, if not the best team in hockey multiple times, only to fall flat on their face. And that shouldn't take away from them winning the Stanley Cup. That's not what I'm saying. But the fact that the Nationals had to go through the Brewers in the wild card round, and then the Dodgers, who were the favorites to win it all, and then they go through St. Louis, a team that's won World Series very recently, and then the Houston Astros, who not only won it in 2017, but everything that's coming out with them cheating, I think all of that combined would actually put Scherzer and Strasburg ahead right now. But the question is, who will go down as the best duo in the modern era, the last 30 years of DC sports? And for anybody that's wondering why we had to cut it off at 30 years, I only get 4 choices on Twitter. And I wanted to put this out as a poll on Twitter, which it is, at Danny Noakes, if you'd like to vote on it. But I had to limit it to 4 choices for that reason. So I go with Ovechkin and Backstrom as the duo that will go down as the best. And it's because I am as confident as ever that they are going to go win another Stanley Cup in the next 2 years. It could be this year. It might be next year. But with the way that Alex Ovechkin is playing, certainly not slowing down. He's scoring goals at as efficient a clip as he has. In his career, which has already been sustained, and then you have Backstrom adding on to that, that their team is just so good, and they're not even playing their best hockey yet. So that's where I think it'll end up. I think Backstrom and Ovechkin will have more accolades by the end of their career, but if you stack them up right now, this very second, I actually think that Scherzer and Strasburg probably have the nod because of how improbable their run was this season. Now, before we get to a break, just a couple of things here on the NFL draft. It's still a few months away. What are the Redskins going to do with the number 2 overall pick? Do you take Chase Young? Or if you think you have the chips, do you go out and try to trade up to number 1 and get Joe Burrow, especially after his 6-touchdown performance in the national championship game against Clemson? Well, his old man said that he'd be happy in Cincinnati with the Bengals, the team that has the number 1 overall pick. And you also have to consider that the Bengals may not be interested in trading that pick. Now, maybe there's a team out there that can give them an offer they can't refuse, but I would say that Joe Burrow's pretty much solidified going number one to Cincinnati, and the Bengals are probably not looking to deal that pick because they've been watching Andy Dalton play quarterback for their franchise now for some time, and he hasn't been terrible, but he certainly hasn't been good, and Cincinnati's still without a playoff win in quite some time. And the other NFL draft story that I had here that was an incredible surprise is Travis Etienne, Clemson's running back, is actually going to stay with Clemson. He's going to come back and try and win another championship with Dabo Swinney, his head coach. And as surprised as I was, The Athletic pointed out online that Christian Wilkins, Isaiah Simmons, and Cleland Furl all came back to school when they certainly would have been high-level NFL draft picks. And Christian Wilkins and Cleland Furl combined to make one of the better defensive lines at the college level that we've seen over the past 20 to 30 years. But Etienne has rushed for north of 3,200 yards and 43 touchdowns over the last two seasons, capping the 2018 season with a national championship, and obviously 2019 here that just went by, falling short in the national championship. But if you've watched Clemson, ETN's acceleration is incredible, and I tend to think that he's the next Alvin Kamara. That's the best comparison that I can make for him. Kamara didn't even really get to shine in college, started his career at Alabama. He got hurt, transferred to a community college, and then he went to Tennessee where he was overshadowed by Jalen Hurd, who got all the carries until Hurd decided that he no longer wanted to play running back, who, by the way, Jalen Hurd does play for the Niners, third-round pick. He doesn't even have any NFL career stats, hasn't played a regular season game. And we've obviously seen the production that Alvin Kamara has had to start his career. He didn't start to tap into his true potential until the Saints figured out what a weapon he was. And I always remember watching the battle at Bristol. I was at that game, Virginia Tech, Tennessee, sitting next to a guy named Charlie Burris, who I still keep in touch with from time to time. He does radio in Tennessee. He told me that night, Kamara is the better back between he and Hurd. He's the stud. He's going to be the better NFL player, and I'll be damned if he didn't absolutely nail that prediction. But I think Etienne is the same type of player. I think if you put him in an offense like that of the New Orleans Saints in the way that they use Alvin Kamara, he could have the same type of impact. I also think he's still very raw. I think if you watch the way that he runs, it sometimes looks even a little bit unnatural. His legs are kind of all over the place. But I think it's something that as he gets older will become more polished. And he's incredibly talented, and it shouldn't hurt his draft stock. I've heard that people had him as low as a third-round pick. I'd be shocked if Etienne, this season or next, he would have to get hurt, and knock on wood that that doesn't happen. Certainly wouldn't wish that upon anybody. But I can't imagine that Etienne doesn't end up going in the first round whenever or if he does, in fact, decide to come out for the NFL draft after the next season, because he just announced that he's going to stay with Clemson for 2020 and try and go chase another championship. That's going to do it for hour two. Coming up, hour three. It's really hour two and a half because we've only been here since 4:30, but we'll call it hour three. With you up until the 7 o'clock hour, we'll get you our show question on the other side. And how did the internet help Major League Baseball crack the sign-stealing case, the cheating Houston Astros? That and more coming up next on 106.7 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.